This and other podcasts are available on the Gun Rights Radio Network, gunrightsradio.com. Podcasting freedom.
Gun Rights Radio Network has the best pro-Second Amendment, pro-gun rights podcast available on the net. The podcasts are absolutely free when subscribing using iTunes or Zune Marketplace, or if you want, you can just listen from the website. Make sure you visit gunrightsradio.com to subscribe. Podcasting freedom, one episode at a time.
Hi folks, Bob Main here with another episode of your weekly Handgun World podcast. I carry a gun because I can't carry a cop. Welcome to episode number 265. This is a practical show done by an everyday guy like me. That's right, that's my background. I didn't come from military or law enforcement or being a gunsmith or anything like that. I just came from being an everyday guy who took a love for a hobby called firearms, competition shooting, training, defensive handguns, so on and so forth. So it became a hobby of mine. It became something that I love to do. Now it's somewhat of a part-time job where I get to do firearms training for a nationally recognized company. And I also do a little bit of independent firearms training with my co-trainer or my co-instructor, Ben Branham, who's the host of the Modern Self-Protection podcast and things like that. I'm living the dream, folks, and it's a lot of fun. So this episode, number 265, I'm going to talk about an experiment that I'm doing. How many of you have ever tried an experiment with firearms? What I'm talking about is using different platforms and training with different platforms. That's my experiment. So you're going to hear about that coming up in the next segment. And also, I'm going to talk about, that's right, just like the episode title, the wussification of America. Okay, I borrowed that term, and you're going to understand what I mean when I get into that. And I've also got listener voicemails. Many of you have been waiting a long time. You've been waiting a long time for me to cover listener voicemails. I've got four or five of them that are going to be at the end of this show. So many thanks to all of you who have called in voicemails recently. Now, let me begin by saying the website is www.handgunworld.com. I can be found on Facebook if you just search Handgun World Podcast. I can be found on YouTube if you just search Handgun World. I can be found on Twitter if you just search Handgun World. Notice a theme here? Anyway, you can reach me by email at bob@handgunworld.com. That's bob@handgunworld.com. And my voicemail number, I'll give it out right up here at the front of the show. So if you want to leave me some voicemails for some future episodes, I'd love to hear from you. 210-646-1727. That's 210-646-1727. Or go to handgunworld.com. Scroll down the right side of the page, and you're going to see a picture of a telephone, and it says, call me. And if you click right there, you can link up your cell phone with my voicemail instantly. It's a pretty cool way, in case you don't want to remember the phone number. That's how you can call in a voicemail. Brief intermission, and we'll get to the next segment about my experiment.
The forums are a great place to interact with the podcasters and other listeners to your favorite podcast. Visit GunRightsRadio.com and click on the Forums button at the top of the page and sign up for your free membership. GunRightsRadio.com.
Okay, this segment of the show, I have a good experiment that I'm conducting that I want to talk to you about. Not quite sure where this is going to fit into this episode, but I'll figure out a good place to put this little segment. All right, you're going to be shocked when you probably hear this, or some of you are going to be shocked. Some of you won't be, and some of you will be. This year in 2014, I am attempting to answer the question, striker-fired pistol versus 1911. Right? And you're going, no, Bob, come on. You're not really going to engage in that, are you? Yeah, I am. Yep, I'm gonna, and notice I didn't say Glock versus 1911. I said striker-fired gun, high-capacity striker-fired gun versus 1911. Well, normal-capacity striker-fired gun, shame on me, versus 1911. for carry and stuff like that in self-defense. And I'm going to report to you at periodic times throughout the year how it's working for me. Okay? Because, you know, for years I've been on this show saying I don't prefer guns that have manual safeties or grip safeties, and I don't prefer guns that hold less than 10 rounds, and so on and so forth. But I just had to do this. This is something I've been wanting to do for a long time, mainly just to settle it in my own mind, okay? I'm kind of being selfish, and I'm really doing this for me, but you're also going to be some of the beneficiaries of what I find out, because I'm going to podcast about them. So how cool is that? It's one of the reasons why you hopefully listen to my show. So here's what I did. Let me tell you what I did. I saved up some Christmas money and stuff like that and saved up my money. I just recently purchased two 1911s. Now, most of you know I had the Ruger SR 1911. I got rid of that because I don't like full-size 1911s. I like the commander size 1911s. They just feel better to me. They just balance better to me, and they feel better to me. And unless I'm trying to shoot a really long distance, I don't think I'm going to notice too much of a difference in the accuracy. Most people, once you become a decent shooter, most of the time you don't notice that much accuracy difference when you go to a compact versus a full-size gun. You know, just because your skills get better. So here's what I'm going to do. I bought two 1911s. I bought a Desert Eagle 1911. Sparks Firearms in San Antonio, where Ben works, they had one there, and I started messing around with it, and I had to take it home. Let me tell you why. Let me tell you why I like the Desert Eagle 1911. By the way, the Ruger SR 1911, I gave it a new home to somebody else who really wanted it. The Desert Eagle, first of all, it's a Series 70 1911. I like the Series 70 for the most part. I got another one that's not a Series 70, but and I'll tell you about that a little bit later. The trigger on it is awesome. And it's a commander length. It's also got a bull barrel. It's got a stainless steel bull barrel with a full-length guide rod, which, you know, I don't know if I'm super crazy about that. But the other 1911 I got is a bushing barrel gun. So, you know, I may actually compare those two and see what I like about those, comparing each one to each other. So I got the Desert Eagle 1911, you know, made by Magnum Research and imported by some company up in Minnesota. And I like it so far. So far I like it. I'm going to give each of these 1911s a 1,000-round trigger job. They're both 45s, so I'm going to drop a little bit of cash doing this. But again, it's a question I'm going to answer for me. Always wanted to do this, and I'm going to do it because I can. Isn't that great? Isn't that fun? Okay, so I'm going to train with these 1911s. Now, when I teach classes, some of the classes I'm going to teach with my Glocks, and some of the classes I'll teach with my 1911. I'm definitely going to teach Suarez International's class with my Glock. My Glock 19 or my Glock 17. So those of you, quite a few of you are signed up for my CRG 2 class coming up in April. The Suarez International Close Range Gunfighting 2, which is a whole new curriculum, folks. We've added some point shooting into that class. So I think you're going to love that. If you can be in San Antonio during the early April time frame, April 5th and 6th, go to my show notes and you'll see a direct link. Come, I'm going to be teaching close range gunfighting. I'll be using my Glock. Probably two different Glocks for that class. Some of the classes that I teach with Ben, I'm going to run a 1911. I might run a 1911 when I'm up there teaching, when Ben and I are up in Arkansas teaching with Hadaway. Might run one of my 1911s in that class. So I'm going to put these through the paces. And since I'm going to be teaching and training, and by the way, I'm going to take two training courses this year as a student. Haven't figured out exactly which ones yet, but I am going to take two training classes as a student. I believe wholeheartedly that every instructor worth his or her salt needs to be taking some kind of a training class every year to keep themselves sharp, to keep their minds open to new ideas. Be wary. Be wary of an instructor who hasn't trained in a long time. All they've been doing is teaching. Just my personal opinion on that. So I got this Desert Eagle 1911. Yeah, I know, it's not American made. Yeah, well, so what? You know, it is a classic 1911. Of course, it has the bull barrel and the full-length guide rod. And I know the 1911 purists out there, I can hear them saying already, oh, it's not a real 1911. It's not the original configuration. I don't care. Okay? If it shoots well, if it's reliable, if it puts those 45 ACP rounds where I want to put them, and it runs, I don't care. The trigger on these Desert Eagle 1911s is outstanding. The trigger on that gun is very nice. So that's one. The other one I got is the SIG RCS 1911, the commander size, 4.2-inch barrel, two-tone with a stainless steel slide, 25 LPI checkering on the front strap, stuff like that. I got the SIG RCS. And I'm going to carry that one from time to time. See, this analysis that I'm going to do this year, and I'll report to you a few things about this little experiment. I'll sprinkle, you know, a little bit of information out there every 6 to 8 weeks. But I'm going to do a big podcast and a big YouTube review towards the end of 2014. I'll do some smaller YouTube reviews, some shorter ones, and some shorter podcasts between now and the end of the year. But the big one's going to be, you know, this 1911 versus Striker Fire. That's going to be the big podcast that I'm going to do. So this Sig Sauer RCS, I'm stoked about it. I don't have it yet at the time that I'm recording this podcast. It's on order. I should have it, in about a week from the date that I'm recording this podcast. I'm recording this on January 15th, so I'll probably have that pistol in my hands before the end of the year. So, let's just put it this way. I'm still a firm believer in Glock pistols or striker-fired guns like the Smith & Wesson M&Ps and Glocks. Even some of the Taurus guns out there have proven to be pretty decent, pretty reliable, fairly decent triggers. Some of the semi-autos by Taurus. And, of course, the Walther PPQ. This year, I got to get a Walther PPQ. I got to put that through the test as well. I'm definitely going to ask John Hadaway if I can shoot one of the four or five PPQs that he has up there in Arkansas when we do that class. I'm still a firm believer in those types of pistols for various reasons that I've covered on this show. But you know what? I'm such a 1911 hater. You know, I mean, I've been labeled a 1911 hater, yes, even though I now own two of them, and I'm going to spend a great deal of time this year training with them. Guess what? I hate them. I'm mocking the people who have put comments on iTunes about my show, comments on different forums saying that I hate 1911s. I don't know where they ever got that from. I've never said that I hate 1911s. I've just talked about how much I'm a believer in the striker-fired guns with normal capacity magazines of, you know, preferably 12 rounds or more. But anyway, so that's what I'm going to do. I got this little experiment that I'm conducting, and here's what I'm going to be looking at. I'm going to be looking at several things. Number one, do the safeties really slow me down that much? Is it a real hindrance? I think it's going to be, but I got to prove it to myself. So I'm going to see if there's times where I miss the safety or if it slows me down a great deal. I want to find out, is it really a training issue or not? At least for me. I want to find out. Because you know what? I hear so many people say it. I hear so many people say that. Well, the 1911, you know, with its two safeties, the grip safety and especially the thumb safety. Well, why, Bob? It's just a training issue. Well, maybe they're right. Maybe they're not right. Maybe it depends on the owner of the gun. I'm going to see if, for me, it's a training issue or not. That's one thing I'm going to be looking at. I'm going to be looking at capacity. I'm going to teach some classes and take some classes with my 1911s. I want to see how well they run. I want to see how many malfunctions I have compared to how many malfunctions I have with my striker-fired guns. Okay, I want to see how much reloading I have to do in training classes and IDPA matches. I'm going to shoot more IDPA matches this year. As a matter of fact, this coming up weekend, by the time you hear this, the match will be over. But this coming up weekend, I'm going to shoot IDPA with my new 1911. I'm going to see how it runs. I'm going to take my Glock as a backup, but I'm going to see how this 1911 runs. So these are some of the questions that I want to examine and answer for myself. You know, how much of an issue really is capacity for me? How much of an issue are these safeties? Weight! You know what I've been doing since I got this Desert Eagle 1911? I've been carrying it every single day, all day. It's an all-steel frame 1911, so I think unloaded it's something like 36 or 37 ounces unloaded. And then, of course, when I give it a full magazine of 45 plus a spare magazine, I'm carrying around some weight. The SIG is like about 9 ounces lighter. So that was one of the reasons why I bought that gun, why I bought the RCS, is because it's an aluminum frame pistol. I want to see how much of a difference that makes. You know, I've always thought, well, it must be a big difference having an aluminum frame 1911. Well, maybe it is, maybe it's not. I don't know. I'm going to answer that question for myself. And again, if some of you haven't done a test like this, if all you've ever owned and shot are striker fired guns, or if all you've ever owned or shot are 1911s, or if you own both but never really spent a lot of time carrying and training both, well then, you might enjoy what I have to say periodically about this little experiment that I'm doing. I want to see how much of a difference the trigger makes. You know, everybody says, oh, well, the 1911, that wonderful trigger. You can be so much more accurate with that wonderful trigger. Let me tell you something, folks. I have seen people come through my classes with their 1911s, and they weren't any more accurate than the people shooting Glocks, XDs, M&Ps. Now, was that because of the shooter, or what was it? You know, these 1911s with these single-action triggers, I mean, you're supposed to be able to hit a gnat sitting on a fence post from 50 yards away, right? Right? Aren't they they're that much more accurate than those cheap, junky, plastic, striker-fired guns? That's what the people on the internet say. Well, we're going to see. Because now I've had several years of training, several years of practice. You know, I think I'm a fairly decent shooter. I'm not going to say I'm a great shooter. I got a lot of work to do. But some of you out there, you've trained with me. You've taken my classes. I'm a decent shooter. I got a ways to go. I can shoot some fairly decent groups. Okay, I scored a 298 out of 300 at the Mag 40 class. I've shot steel on the run in some of the classes that I've taught. And, you know, I've won an IDPA match, stock service pistol category, and I've finished in the top 5 in SSP many, many times at my local IDPA club. So, you know, I'm not a novice. So I want to see if this trigger stuff, these nice single action triggers, I want to see how much of a difference it makes. I'm going to keep a log on my iPad. I'm going to use the notes function on my iPad. I'm going to keep a log of every round that I fire, not every round, but every range session with these 1911s. And I'm going to approximate, how many times did I miss? How many malfunctions did I have? Why? And then the next time I go out with one of my Glocks, I'm going to do the same thing. And I'm going to report them to you. And I'm going to try to put some internet rumors to rest. I'm going to try to put some conventional wisdom either to rest or prove it. You never know, I might prove some of the conventional wisdom out there. I might prove what all the internet commandos are saying, sitting behind their keyboard, spending more time typing on forums than they are at the range training and practicing. Right? You know some people like that, right? And they're usually... Have you ever noticed that the internet commandos, you know, the keyboard warriors, have you ever noticed those that sit behind their keyboard for hours and hours putting information about guns on the internet? You know, have you ever noticed that those are the ones that spend an incredible amount of time putting words on computer screens? And it really makes you wonder, they must not have much more time left over to go to the range. See, I'm going to be the opposite. I'm not going to pontificate on internet forums and blogs very much about this. I'm going to inject a small segment once a month into my podcast. I'm going to get out there and actually do it and train with these. So this is something I've always wanted to do. Recently, I've had the financial resources to buy these two 1911s. Many thanks to a lot of you. A lot of you who have supported the show, come to my training classes, things like that. So thank you. So here comes the test. 1911 versus Striker Fire by Bob Main. And so I'm going to kick it off today while you're hearing this podcast. And like I said, about once every 6 to 8 weeks or so, I'll spend 10 or 15 minutes giving you some results. I'll read from the log that I'm going to keep on my iPad. Okay? So anyway, I wanted to throw that announcement out there, see what you thought of that. And if you have any questions, and by the way, if you have some suggestions for me that you would like me to test with these two 1911s and my striker-fired guns, if you have something, if there's something I'm missing or you want to just, you know, throw a suggestion out there, I'd love to hear it. I just might take you up on it. You can voicemail me. 210-646-1727. That's the number. 210-646-1727. Or go to handgunworld.com. On the right-hand margin near the bottom, there's a call me button with a picture of a phone. You can click that, put in your phone number, and it'll automatically connect you to my voicemail. Or you can email me. Emails are a little tough. I get so many emails now, both, you know, with my full-time job and this podcast combined. I just simply don't have enough time to get to every email. Or Facebook messages. I'm getting crap loads of Facebook messages, which that's good. But please, I don't want anybody to be offended whatsoever. Please don't be offended if I don't immediately answer your email. Or if I don't immediately answer your Facebook message. Just physically, I mean, just there's just simply not enough time that I have available to me to do that. So if you have suggestions, the best way to do it would be to either voicemail me or get on one of the forums, like the Gun Rights Radio Network forum or something like that, and put your comments up there. All right, quick intermission or sound effect, and we'll get to the next segment.
The president and other politicians are protected by men carrying rifles and pistols with high-capacity magazines, but they're outlawing them for you and me. Do they think their lives are more important than ours?
Gun control is not about stopping crime. It's about disarming America.
All right, time for the main topic. I'm still in the Handgun World mobile studio, cruising down the freeway. This episode was called Not Quite There. That was the name that I gave it, just Not Quite There. What do I mean by that? Well, what I mean by that is there's just some people, when it comes to their self-defense, and when it comes to preparing themselves for self-defense, they're just not quite there yet. They just don't quite get it. They're not quite there. This main topic has been inspired by the Student of the Gun podcast by Paul Markle that I listen to. I just started listening to the Student of the Gun about a month ago. Good stuff. Paul Markle, real good. He just recently filled in for Tom Gresham on Tom Gresham's Gun Talk podcast. Paul, on January 1st, released a podcast called Half Measures. You need to listen to it. Really good. He talked about half measures that people take to protect themselves. So I'm borrowing this idea from Paul Markle. So let me just tell you where I got the idea from. Listen to Student of the Gun podcast. If you don't already listen to it, I'm going to link to it in the show notes. You need to listen to the January 1st episode. Well, you should listen to most of them. But in particular, if you want to know where I got this idea from, that would be the Half Measures, Self-Defense Half Measures podcast at Student of the Gun with the host Paul Markle. And he talked about half measures that people take to protect themselves. And I started thinking about this, and I thought, well, you know why they take half measures? Because they're just not quite there yet. They just don't get it. Here's what I mean. And this is, you know, some of you can probably relate to this. I bet you're going to know somebody that I'm talking about when I discuss this topic. A lot of people think that there are certain things that you just should not do to defend yourself. I don't know why they think that. They just think, oh, yeah, I just shouldn't do that to defend myself. And I've never understood that. Have you? Why do people feel that there's something that is off limits, something that's taboo, something that's not allowed when it comes to defending and saving your life. Why are people that way? I think it's because, you know, a lot of people have been wussified. You know, this is the wussification of America going on here. I think it was Glenn Tate that I first heard say that. I'm sure a lot of people have said that. But, you know, the wussification of America. People are turning into wussies. You know, hang on a second. I'm gonna pause real fast just to take a quick phone call. Okay, back with you. Had to grab a phone call from a customer. You know, I think I changed my mind. I'm not going to call this podcast Not Quite There. I'm going to call it The Wussification of America, because I think that's the root of this problem. You know, why is it that people take half measures? Well, they're wussies, right? They've been turned into wussies. They've been wussified. The wussification of America has been going on for a long time. Oh, I just couldn't do that to defend myself. I couldn't own a gun. Why, guns are bad. I just couldn't do that. And Paul talked about how people will use like a baseball bat. They'll just say, well, I got a bat. I keep a bat next to my bed. That's good enough. I love what Paul said. And he's speaking to people who are wussified and people who only keep a bat for self-defense. And he asked a great question. When's the last time that you used a baseball bat to fight somebody? I bet the answer you'll hear most of the time is, well, I've never done that. How much training do you have using a bat or a club? Right? I mean, there's a certain way to use it to become extremely effective with it. You know, do you know what you're doing? And by the way, folks, don't you think the bad guys do a little training and figure out what to do if the person that they're attacking has a baseball bat? You know, a lot of guys that break into people's houses and overpower women and rape them, a lot of these guys are strung out on drugs, or they're big, huge, 250-pound, muscular, very well-conditioned men. Right? Ladies, I'm speaking to you. You want to try to go up against that guy with a baseball bat? Or a club? Or a golf club? Hey, baseball bats are meant for hitting baseballs. Golf clubs are meant for hitting golf balls. They're really not meant to be used as a weapon. You can use them as a weapon, but do you know what you're doing with it? Because, let me tell you what, a fight is something, unless you've actually been in a fight, or unless you've trained to be in a fight, with preferably people who have been in a fight and know what they're doing. The average person probably doesn't know too much about how to use that baseball bat. That baseball bat can easily be taken away from you by somebody that knows how to disarm you. That golf club that you're swinging can probably be taken away from you pretty easily if someone has even just a little bit of training on what to do. So, the wussification of America also includes things like canes. You know, people say, well, you know, I keep a cane next to my bed. Yeah, sure. Yeah, do you know how to use that cane? Here's one I really like. I've heard this a lot. Paul didn't talk about this on his Student of the Gun podcast. I got me a big, mean dog. In fact, I got me two big, mean dogs. That's their self-defense inside their home. A big, mean dog. Let me tell you something, folks. I know you love your dogs. I love our dog. And I'm not cutting down your furry friend, Fido. But dogs can be pretty easily defeated. I used to hear this a lot when I was in the security alarm business selling home security alarms. Well, I don't need an alarm. I got me a dog. Yeah, sure. You know, and what if you're not home and people break into your house and shoot your dog? What if they come in with a piece of poisoned meat in a plastic bag? As soon as they bust into your house, they throw the meat on the floor. Guess what? Your dog is going after that meat laced with cyanide. I don't care how big, bad, and mean your dog is. You throw a nice, big, juicy piece of raw meat in front of a dog, and the dog has to make a choice. Do I pounce all over this raw meat, or do I attack this guy that just threw me this raw meat? Boy, that meat looks awful good. Right? What if your dog gets shot 3-4 times when the bad guys come in? Okay, so get an alarm, folks. Get an alarm for your home security. But now, that's also part of the wussification of America. Because then people get an alarm, they get an alarm installed, and I have an alarm, and I'm a firm believer in security alarms. I'm a huge believer in security alarms. Let me back up for a second. Dogs are great, but dogs are a warning system. Dogs are not your only line of defense protecting your house. Please, people, don't depend on an animal to save your life. Animals, they're just that. They're animals. They may not always make the right decision. I don't care how mean you think your dog is. They're a great warning system. They'll make all kinds of noise to warn you that somebody's coming in your house and wants to harm you. Somebody that shouldn't be there, probably. And the dog can sense that. They're fantastic warning systems. They are not your sole method of home defense. So then people go out and they buy an alarm system. Yeah, that's the way to do it. An alarm system's going to stop that rapist? Sure. Well, let me tell you what, that's another layer of protection. Yes, an alarm system is yet another layer of protection. I believe in layers of protection, but the ultimate layer of protection is that firearm. The great equalizer, as some people call it. But the firearm has to be in the hands of someone that knows how to use it. I'll get to that a little bit later. So people buy an alarm. You know how many people regularly, judiciously arm their alarm systems before they go to bed every night? Normally they do for about 10 days after they buy the alarm. And how do I know this? Okay, I know what I'm talking about, folks, because I used to be in this business. I was in this business for a little over 5 years selling security alarms. And I was a branch manager and a sales manager, but I was out on the street selling security alarms for quite some time. I did pretty well with it. And we would do surveys. We would do satisfaction surveys. We'd call the customer back, and we'd ask them how they liked their alarm and everything. And normally we got some good feedback. And we used to like to ask the question, how are you using your alarm? Are you arming your alarm at night when you go to bed? Rarely did we hear them say yes. Now, we'd call them back about a month after we installed it. So we started doing a little bit more in-depth studies, and we found about 10 or 11 days. Most people, for the first 10 or 11 days, because the alarm is something new and because it makes them feel good, they arm it when they go to bed. Okay? And then after that, life gets in the way and they quit doing it. So the reality of it is most people don't have their alarm system armed when they're at home. They may arm it when they leave, but they don't normally arm it when they are at home, especially at night. But even so, a determined bad guy ain't paying no attention to the alarm. You know why he's not paying a whole lot of attention to the alarm? Because he knows it's going to be a pretty long time before the police show up. If they even do show up. There are some jurisdictions, ladies and gentlemen, and I know this from experience too. There are some jurisdictions in the United States of America where the police no longer respond to home alarms. Did you know that? Some jurisdictions, the police no longer report, they no longer respond to home alarms. The alarm company has to hire a guard service, and the guard service has to go to the home and check things out to see if the police should be called. Now, can you imagine that? Think about that. And then when the police show, what are they going to do? Right? Police are historians most of the time. You call 911, what's the average response time? I like to joke around, you know? What's the average response time on 911? Well, you probably hear a lot of different stories. Okay? It's probably 5 to 10 minutes, something like that. What's the average response time of a 9mm bullet? 1,350 feet per second? What would you rather have, 5 to 10 minutes or 1,350 feet per second? Think about it. Alarm's okay, but it's not the end-all, be-all. Then they go out and they get pepper spray. Oh, certainly don't want to buy a gun, but I'm going to get pepper spray, and I'm going to keep pepper spray next to my bed. I'm going to keep pepper spray in my purse. Women do that all the time. And Paul was talking about in his podcast that they go out and they buy this cheap little $9 bottle of pepper spray that isn't worth a crap. Go to a police supply store and buy decent pepper spray. Okay? Go to a law enforcement supply store. Buy the good stuff. Isn't your life worth that? It's like when people cheap out on ammo. Yeah, they cheap out on self-defense ammo. Oh, I think I'm going to buy this box over here because it's $6 less than this really expensive good stuff. You mean your life is not worth the extra $6? Come on. Why not? But pepper spray's okay if you know how to use it. What if you're attacked in your home by more than one person? Okay? So let's go back to the baseball bats and the golf clubs and the canes and all the other alternative half measures, as Paul put it. I call it the wussy attempts at defending yourself. Pepper spray might work well one-on-one. So ladies, if you're out on the street, yeah, have pepper spray with you. It might work. It might just buy you that extra 2 seconds to get away. I get that. I'm talking about home defense. What if there's more than one? Do you know how to take care of both of them? With a baseball bat, can you fight off two people? Can you fight off three people with a baseball bat? Plenty of reports of home invasions being done by two people, sometimes three. Really? Yeah, so a little old lady with a baseball bat is going to fight off two big giant guys coming in that want to harm her? Right, a 19-year-old girl who's at home by herself, this 19-year-old girl's going to get a baseball bat and she's going to fight off two big giant guys that want to come in her house and rape her? Now, I know I'm talking about some pretty gnarly stuff here, but I'm doing it for a reason, folks. I'm trying to wake you guys up. You know, or I'm trying to give you some tools that you can use to talk to other people, to wake them up. Pepper spray, can you use it? Do you know how to use it? Can you be effective with it? How long do you think the pepper spray is going to last if you spray him? And then, think about this. Okay, so if the home intruder has a buddy, sometimes the buddy doesn't come in right away. So you pepper spray the first guy, now the second guy shows up. Now what? You know, look, are you prepared for all this stuff? Have you thought this stuff out in advance? Or do you just go down to the law enforcement supply store, buy pepper spray, stick it in your purse, or if you're a guy, carry it in your pocket or on your belt or whatever. You keep it by your bedside and say, okay, I'm good now. I'm firmly convinced this is part of the wussification of America. I might be offending some people. I don't care. I don't care if I'm offending some people with this because, you know what? I know this to be true. I know that many times people think that they can defend themselves while they're inside their home, especially, and they really aren't trained with the devices that they have. And it gives them a false sense of security. And that's the problem. And this is a great one. I'm sure you've heard this before. Paul Markle talked about it in his Student of the Gun podcast on half measures. Wasp spray. Yeah, when he said that, I started thinking, you know what? I have people I know. One of them's a relative that did that very thing. Bought a can of wasp spray and kept the wasp spray on her nightstand next to her bed. And that's going to protect her. Wasp spray. That's going to protect her from the crack-induced, drug-induced felon that weighs 230 pounds and is violent and wants to rape her or kill her. Wasp spray? Really? And then you get these people. Okay, then you get the people who do get a gun. Let's say they go and they get a shotgun, right? This is what I love. This is great. You get these people that go out and they get a shotgun and they put like, you know, 4 or 5 shells in it. But they don't chamber one. And they think just the kerchunk kerchunk is going to make the bad guy pee his pants and leave. Well, see, now you got one chambered when you do that kerchunk kerchunk and you pump that shotgun, but will you really pull the trigger? You know, a few years back I did an episode called Can You Pull the Trigger? Can you really do it? I actually talked to a person one time that doesn't even load his shotgun. Can you believe this? Listen to this. He keeps a shotgun under his bed. He doesn't even load it. You know what he said to me? I'm just going to grab it and I'm going to pump it. Ka-chunk, ka-chunk. And that's going to be good enough. That's the universal sound that makes people flee like scared rabbits. Yeah, sure it does. Well, the gun store clerk told me that. Is the gun store clerk a self-defense expert? Does the gun store clerk know that to be true? Has he tried it? Or is he just regurgitating something that he's heard a million other people say? And then you get the people that say, yeah, all right, I'm going to get a gun, and I'm going to load it up, but you know what? If someone comes into my house, all I'm going to do is fire warning shots. Whoa, isn't that brilliant? Yeah, fire warning shots. Just shoot. Just do a Joe Biden, right? Just step out on your back porch and blast your shotgun straight up in the air, and that'll make everybody just flee. Yeah, you know what? When those pellets come down, it's going to hit little six-year-old Johnny that happened to be outside getting some fresh air when you stepped out on your back porch and blasted two rounds from your double-barrel shotgun up into the air. Or people say, I'm just going to fire some warning shots. And those bullets exit your house, and they lodge themselves into perhaps the heart of somebody at your neighbor's, in your neighbor's backyard, if you happen to be that close. Really good. Yeah, good. You fired warning shots, and now somebody else got hurt. But why do people say that? Why do people think that? It's part of the wussification of America. You follow me? So as Paul said, all these half measures, but I call them all these wussified measures, they don't take the place of somebody that has self-defense training and they have a real firearm loaded up with normal capacity magazines, and they know how to use it, and they're willing to press that trigger, and they're willing to defend their life with as much lethal force as is necessary to get rid of the bad guys. Nothing takes place of that. Oh, but we're taught we shouldn't do that. We're taught that that's violence and we shouldn't do that. Really? So these felons, these hardened criminals that are also violent, that want to come in and hurt you, that you should not respond with equal force? Why are people taught that? Why do people think that? A lot of times it starts when they're young. And society has been doing this. Society has been teaching this to people. It starts when they're young. It starts when they're little kids in elementary school, right? It starts when they're really young. And their parents and their grandparents, who are anti-gun for whatever reason, who knows why, who knows what bogus reason that they're anti-gun, and then they tell their children, oh, guns are bad, guns are evil. You shouldn't have a gun. Only bad guys use guns. I actually heard that one time. Heard that from a family member. Not an immediate family member. Okay? Heard that from an aunt. Only bad guys use guns. Really? You know what my aunt said when she said that only bad guys use guns? She called every cop in the United States a bad guy because they use guns. How about that? She doesn't realize that's what she did, but that's what she did. Only bad guys use guns. And see, little kids are taught that, and they're impressionable little children, and they believe that. I mean, you know, what do you typically learn when you're a kid? You learn what the adults tell you. And then you believe what the adults tell you. So that's what happens, okay? And then they're barraged when they become a little bit older and they become teenagers or they become college-age young people. Now they're just blasted with all this other garbledy gook. Like, well, these bad guys, they just need help. And they need to be rehabilitated. Okay? Who was it? Was it a politician? Help me remember this, folks. Please send me an email, bob@handgunworld.com. Call in a voicemail, 210-646-1727. Or send me an email or something. But who was the lady when she was asked, how do you stop a man from raping a woman? And her response was, Well, we just need to tell men to stop raping women. Seriously, that was her response. We just need to stop. We just need to tell men to stop raping women. Oh, yeah, they're going to listen to that, right? Yeah, these hardened felons who probably have been in jail two or three times, right? And they're out, or they beat the rap or whatever. And they're violent, and they're part of a street gang. That'll solve the problem, right? Go up to them and say, hey, gangbanger, please just stop raping women, please. And maybe if you say pretty please with sugar on top, then they'll stop, right? Yeah, that was a solution floated by somebody. I can't remember if the woman was a politician or if she was some kind of news host or activist or something. I don't know. Help me out. I think I'm going to try to look it up and put it in the show notes. But that was a response. Yeah, mm-hmm. Or, well, they had bad childhoods. Yeah, okay. So they had a bad childhood and they want to kill you. But that's why you should not have a gun. That's why you should not use deadly force to protect yourself. Because the bad guy's got a problem. See, this is the wussification of America. This is what people have been taught for probably the last 30, 40, or 50 years. I know, folks, I'm 52 years old. I heard this stuff. I heard this kind of stuff being said when I was, like, starting around 6 or 7 years old. I'm glad that my parents didn't tell me this stuff. I'm glad that my parents kind of stepped in and said, now, Bob, well, they used to call me Bobby back then. They used to say, Bobby, look, here's the way it is. Okay? I remember my dad, you know, Bobby, here's the deal. Okay? Bad guy comes on the property. We don't want the bad guy here. We can't get the bad guy to leave. I open up my safe. I pump my 12-gauge shotgun. And I fill his backside with lead. I mean, that's what my dad would say. I mean, that's what he did say. You know? And my mom, same thing. You know, my mom and my dad did not wussify me. You know, my dad had a shotgun in my hand before I was 11 and made me take hunter safety and learn how to use it. And desensitized me from society, basically. They tried to tell me that guns were wrong. But this has been going on so long, this is why people think that baseball bats and wasp spray and pepper spray and golf clubs and a big bad dog and alarm system and a walking cane or firing warning shots or making noise with your shotgun and all that stuff, that's going to take care of the bad guys. Recently, a couple of days before I started recording this podcast, I'm recording this on the 16th of January. On January 14th, I forgot where it was, but I'm going to link to the story. A 12-year-old went into school with a shotgun and shot two kids in school in the gymnasium. We just had a little school shooting. I shouldn't call it a little school shooting, right? No school shooting is little. Shame on me. Any kind of a school shooting, any kind of a mass shooting, period, is a tragedy. I don't think the two youngsters that were shot, I don't think that they have died. They're most likely going to make it, thank God. I hope, at least. But he used a shotgun. Now, I put a post on Facebook, kind of joking and kind of not joking, kind of tongue-in-cheek. You remember Vice President Joe Biden telling us? Just buy a shotgun. Buy a shotgun. You don't need an AR-15 for self-defense. Just buy a shotgun. Okay, a kid went into a school with a shotgun and shot kids. Do you think Vice President Joe Biden's going to get on TV and take his words back? How long do you think we're all going to wait for that one? Well, come on, he told us to buy a shotgun. All you need is a shotgun. So the point that I'm getting at here is that, folks, you really need to lose all of the bad stuff that you were taught about firearms. You need to get rid of that. If that's an issue for you, if you're listening to this, and, you know, maybe you just started listening to me because I get a lot of new listeners every month. People email me. Or maybe somebody has asked you to listen to this podcast lose the thinking that you need to go easy on the bad guy. I don't know where that kind of wussification came from, but you don't need to go easy on the bad guy. Okay? You need to use whatever method that you have available to you to defeat the bad guy. That is the only thing that's going to work. And Paul Markle made a great point. I think the best part of that podcast, please go listen to that show. The best thing he said is when people finally do get a firearm and then they start cheaping out on stuff. Like, for example, they buy a box of ammunition that might be somewhat inferior because it's $10 less. Okay? I think he used the example of pepper spray. You know, somebody bought a $9 bottle of pepper spray versus something that was $30 because they saved $21, right? And his point was, if there's a bad guy about ready to punch you in the face and overpower you and screw you up badly, and right before he punched you, if I came up to you and asked and said to you, you know what, if you give me $21, I'll stop that guy from punching you. Would you give me $21? Right? Yeah, you'd probably give me $21 as fast as you possibly can. But you wouldn't give the store an extra $21 to buy the more quality pepper spray. Why? You won't spend the extra $10 or $11 on really good ammunition that's been proven on the street to work, or that's been proven in hundreds of ballistic tests to work. You won't buy that because it's an extra $9 for a box. But if all of a sudden you're about to get killed, and I come up to you and say, you know what, for an extra $9 I can stop this guy, then you'll pay it. Whew, man. Don't cheap out, folks. Get the best gun you can afford. I've talked about this before. You know, when Glenn Tate and I did the show on inexpensive revolvers. There's nothing wrong with getting an inexpensive revolver if that's all you can afford. That's fine. Load your revolver with some really good 38 Special or 357 Magnum hollow points, or whatever caliber your revolver is. Load it with the best ammunition you can possibly find. Even if you only buy one box of 20 rounds, get the good stuff. Get the stuff that's really going to make the bad guy have a very, very bad day. Don't cheap out. Get the best gun you can afford. And so, earlier in the segment, earlier in this episode, excuse me, in the prior segment, when I talked about the experiment that I'm going to do, you know, I decided to buy some pretty decent quality 1911s. And most of you know, I like Glock pistols, and I like Carr Arms pistols. And by the way, you know, Carr Arms pistols are not cheap. You know, when I bought my Carr PM9, it was like over $550. When I bought my Carr P380, it was like $565 or something like that. Okay? And I mean, Glocks are really not a cheap pistol. Neither are M&Ps, neither are XDs. I mean, they're not low-cost pistols. They're about medium-cost pistols. And they're very good quality. And I think the Carr Arms pistols are very good quality. And the Sig Sauer 1911 that I ordered that I just cannot wait to get is good quality. And I have great things to say so far about this this Desert Eagle Commander 1911 made by Magnum Research in Israel. Okay? So, you know, get the best that you can afford. And if you can't afford guns like that, there's all kinds of inexpensive revolvers. There's used Glocks. Gosh, you can find police trade-in used Glocks sometimes for $300. You know, if I had the choice of buying a revolver, buying a brand new revolver for $300 or a police trade-in Glock for $300, I'm taking the police trade-in Glock every time. More capacity, probably easier to shoot. Fairly easy to be accurate with. Probably hasn't been shot much. Been in and out of a holster a lot when the cop was carrying it. And for a lot of cops, it was shot once a year. You know, but once people are de-wussified. Is that a word? Maybe I just made up a word. De-wussified. Once they're no longer giving in to the wussification of American culture, then unfortunately so many people cheap out. So please don't do that. And I thought that was a great analogy, a great way to put it that Paul used. I mean, that was, you know, I'm borrowing that and I'm giving credit where credit is due, because that is a great way to explain it, is it not? Somebody's about to kill you. Would you give me an extra $20 or so if I could guarantee you that I would stop them? Yeah, just let that run through your brain for a while. And then, of course, there's training. Then, you know, people go out and buy all this expensive equipment. They buy expensive pepper spray. They buy an expensive gun. They get expensive ammunition. But do you know how to use it? Just because you have an expensive gun, if you can't hit the broadside of a barn with it, how good is it? I don't care if you buy a $3,500 Nighthawk pistol. Go out and get that $3,500 Nighthawk pistol. It's not going to shoot itself. Okay? It's not going to automatically put two or three shots right where they need to be to make the bad guy stop right away. It's not going to do that by itself. It's not going to bust off the X and get you off the line and draw and fire rounds on the bad guy while you're moving out of his way, away from his knife, away from his baseball bat or his gun. The $3,500 pistol is not going to do that. It just simply is not going to do that on its own. So what does that mean? You have to learn how to use what you have got. Are you taking some martial arts classes? You know what? A lot of people in this industry, they think, oh, they got a gun. I got my binky. It's like a binky, right? It's like it's their satisfaction there. I carry a gun on my hip every day. Yeah, I'm a badass. You know, oh, excuse me. It's supposed to be a family-friendly show. Sorry. Yeah, I'm bad because I carry this gun. Uh-huh. And you know what? They're 75 pounds overweight. If you ask them to move away from an attacker, they can barely run. And they're going to move so slow. Boy, I tell you what, they're going to get cut up by that bad guy's knife before they move out of the way and draw their pistol, because they're out of shape and they don't know what to do. They haven't taken any classes. Hey, you know what? Part of self-defense is get in shape. Here's another way that we have a wussification of America going on. Americans are fat, not a shape. I'm sorry if that offends some of you. We just are. I mean, we just are. End of this month, my son and I are starting a new training program. And the reason we're waiting until the end of this month is because my son's in driver's ed right now. Oh, boy, that's a scary thought. Oh, man. My son is in driver's ed. Whew. He's going to be 16 in March. He's in driver's ed. Wow. With all the knuckleheads on the road in San Antonio, man, I'm going to be a scared dad. I can tell you that right now. Oh, man, geez, I don't know. And you know what? My Handgun World Mobile Studio, my 2002 Honda Accord, I'm actually in a rental car today. That's probably going to end up being my son's car. I may have to kiss that car goodbye because it may never look the same again. Yeah, some of you who have raised kids and brought them through the driving stage, you know exactly what I mean. Anyway, my son won't be out of driving school until the end of January. So once he's out of driving school, or at least the classroom portion of driving school, we'll have more time to go take some martial arts classes together and get back in shape. I put a little bit of weight on over the holidays. Not much, but a little bit. It'll come off quick. Once I get determined, it comes off quick. But I'm in reasonable condition. But America's been so wussified with their bags of Cheetos and their cupcakes and potato chips and sitting watching movies on the couch or watching football and pigging out and getting overweight. Well, and then they say, well, guess what? I'm just going to go ahead and put my gun on and I'm going to go out about into society and, you know, even though I'm grossly out of shape and can't move, I'm okay. I got my binky. I got my gun. Now, I'm not talking about people with disabilities. I'm talking about people who don't have a disability and they just don't they don't take care of themselves. That's who I'm talking about. More of the wussification of America. Yeah. So that's kind of my main topic here. Kind of provocative, I understand. Kind of provocative. Yeah, maybe I threw some of my own opinions in there, but it's what I see out there, folks. It's what I see. You know, ever since I started doing this podcast a little over 4 years ago, I've been paying close attention, real close attention. I take mental notes of what I see and what I hear. And when I hear people talk about their self-defense, and I ask them, I just ask them polite questions. And, you know, I don't ask them questions in an offensive way. I just keep it real polite. But I ask them, how are they set up? What are they doing? Some of the stuff I hear, it just blows my mind. So, that's the main topic. If you got some opinions or questions, you'd like to chime in, don't forget about my voicemail and email. Just a quick break, and I'll be right back. Okay, time for some listener voicemails. I hope you enjoyed my main topic. I want to apologize to all of you who called in a voicemail. I got way behind. I'm sorry, folks. I'm going to make sure I don't get this far behind again. But I've got, let's see, I have four voicemails here that I want to recall, want to answer. By the way, the number is 210-646-1727. That's 210-646-1727. Or you can go to handgunworld.com. And if you scroll down to the right, go to the right side of the page and scroll down about halfway down, you'll see a big call me button. And you can use that and it'll connect your cell phone to my voicemail. I love getting these voicemails, folks. Keep them coming. So let's take the first one.
Hey, Bob. How you doing? I'm a big fan of the show. Quick question for you. I know you don't normally talk about the AR-15 platform, but I had an idea slash question that I wanted to run by you. So it seems that all the rage recently is the mid-length gas system, and for somebody that doesn't already have a mid-length gas system, it would be pretty expensive to change out the barrel and the certain parts that would be needed to convert your existing rifle to a mid-length gas system, which is supposedly supposed to have a smoother shot, less felt recoil, and things of that nature. So I was wondering, why not just use an adjustable gas block on your existing gas system, same as a longer or shorter or whatever length gas system you want, you're looking for. Any information on this would help a lot. Appreciate it. Thanks a lot. Bye.
Yes, the wonderful AR-15, America's most popular rifle. I don't know, sir. Actually, I don't know the answer to your question. You know, I'm not going to BS people if I don't know the answer to a question. And when it comes to AR-15s, when it comes to the technical stuff about AR-15s, I'm not that good at it. I got to be honest with you. So an adjustable gas block sounds like a good idea, but I'm not going to go ahead and put my 2 cents in there because I don't know that much about it. What I am going to do is I am going to ask some other people that I know that do know a lot about AR-15s, and I'm going to ask them your question. I might even, if you don't mind, I'm probably just going to go ahead and email them your audio clip here and see what they think about it. If you are listening to this and you have some advice for this caller, please call in a voicemail or send me a quick email and we'll get his question answered. All right, let's move on to the next one.
Just wanted to call and let you know how much I'm enjoying your podcast. I'm a criminal justice student here in Georgia, and I was looking for podcasts, gun-oriented podcasts with good, usable information rather than the plethora of podcasts where it's just two people talking to each other about guns. Yours seems to have an outline, a point to each broadcast, and also seems to cover things that are important to me. I just want to call and encourage you to continue what you're doing. Appreciate your work and look forward to your future podcast. Thank you.
And thank you for the compliment, sir. I appreciate that. I learned a long time ago when I was a professional public speaker. I don't know if some of you noticed that I do that, or I think I told that story. I did that back in my 20s. In my mid to late 20s and early 30s, I was a professional public speaker, basically. I was in the seminar promotion business, but the way I did it was going out and giving speeches, sometimes as many as three or four per day, averaging pretty much about 10 a week. So I learned real quickly, you have to be brief on each point. You have to make a point, and then you got to recap your point, ask some good pertinent questions, and then move on. That's pretty much what it is. So, you know, a good thing, good technique, folks, if you want to learn to teach things or to talk to people, is don't drone on and on and on and make your point. People appreciate brevity. Sometimes they don't mind if you're brief, okay? Just get to the point and be brief. And they love it. I know, at least I do. So, thank you, sir. I very much appreciate your compliment. Let's go to the next one.
Hey, Bob, Mexican Joe here, Northeast Texas. Hey, I'm calling in about episode 261 on the Handgun World, interview you did with you and Ben about carrying and property owners and all that kind of stuff. You guys had mentioned in the end of the podcast a way to bring friends in and let people know which businesses do and do not let you carry. I've got an app on my phone that I want to let you know about, and you can even do an interview with this guy. I've heard an interview with him once before. He's got an app that he created, and it's called Safe to Carry. And if you open the app, it will tell you what businesses are gun-friendly, and you can tag businesses that are both gun-friendly and gun-unfriendly. So therefore, you can take a proactive approach to exactly what you and Ben were talking about in mentioning, letting people know which businesses are anti-gun. So if you're getting ready to, if you live in a metroplex or in San Antonio or a bigger area, bigger than Northeast Texas, and you're going to go in to eat somewhere, you can check that area, that restaurant out before you go in to see if you're allowed to carry there or not. Also, I know that in the concealed weapons class for Texas, they go into places you can't carry. When in question, you can also use that app as an additional resource to let you know if you can or cannot carry there. As, of course, more people use the app, the database will become more filled with information of where you can and can't carry. But on the note that you guys have mentioned about not letting people know, or about letting people know, you know, what businesses not to use because they don't allow weapons, that's a good way to do it. And, again, the app is called Safe to Carry. The icon on my phone's green, and it looks like it's got a Glock pistol in it. So you'll be happy about that. Anyway, just a note for your podcast on that. That's a great resource that it sounds like you guys were unaware of. All right. Y'all be good and be safe. Bye-bye.
Thanks, Joe. Hey, Joe is a great participator in the other podcast and forum that I have called Today's Survival Show. He also is a regular listener to this show, and that's a great great tidbit of information there. Safe to Carry. I'm going to download that app as soon as I'm done recording this podcast. Safe to Carry on the App Store. Cool. Cool. Thank you. And I might even post some anti-gun businesses on there. Thanks, Joe. I appreciate it. Let's take the next one.
Hey, Bob. How you doing? This is Nelson from San Antonio. Just wanted to give you a call. Happy New Year, first of all. Hope you had a good holiday season to you and yours. But, Bob, the reason for my call is I've heard you talk about American Gun Oil, and I'm really willing to give it a shot, and I know that they're a sponsor to your show, so I don't want to intrude on it. So if you don't want to put this message up on your podcast, I totally, you know, perfectly fine. But I just wanted to ask you, have you ever tried Frog Loop? I've been hearing rave reviews about it online, and I went ahead and tried some of the Frog Loop on my Glock 26 and on my Ruger LC9 and Ruger LCP. And I have to say, I'm really, really liking that stuff, and especially knowing that it's not petroleum-based. But anyway, I was just really wondering if you had given it a try. Have you heard anything of it? Maybe any other listeners heard about it? Again, I don't mean to intrude on knowing that you are sponsored by American Gun Oil. And I'm sure it's great, and I'd be willing to give it a shot, but I was wondering if there's anything, any plus or minuses that I can be concerned about on my own personal behalf. I kind of like it. It makes the gun run smooth. It makes it smell nice also, which is great. But anyway, just trying to see what your thoughts on are on all this. But thanks for everything, Bob. Keep up the good work, and I'll talk to you soon. Enjoy the podcast. Bye.
Good to hear from you, Nelson. I've never tried Frog Lube, but I know quite a few people do. I think Ben Branham's using Frog Lube and likes it quite a bit. I'm going to see if I can ask him to chime in maybe in an upcoming episode soon about Frog Lube. I do notice that it's not petroleum-based. That is kind of cool. You know, kind of a green lube, I guess. Yeah, American Gun Oil helps out promoting my show and so forth, but look, if there's another product out there that's also pretty good, I'm going to tell folks about it. I like Militech, but Militech is petroleum-based, but I've been using Militech a long time. I also like American Gun Oil. I really like American Gun Oil for the AR-15s that I have. But Frog Lube, I think I'm going to probably pick some up. I think I'm going to buy some and evaluate it. If it's working, great. A lot of good lubrication products out there for handguns and for rifles and shotguns and everything. Pick one that you like and go for it. Nelson, thanks for calling that in. So I'll try to get you some more information on that, maybe pick some up and run that in my 1911s and see how it works out. All right, let's take the next one.
Hi, Bob. Keith calling from Northern Ohio. Quick handgun question. I had my permit about a year and been carrying a 1911 Kimber Compact. It's been fun. It's been tons of fun, and I'm trying to learn as I do this. So I've taken a few classes, Dave Spalding class, and some classes locally with some of the local clubs. Anyway, my question is, I was a little concerned reading the other day when guys are talking on the forum about how to feel confident with the ammo you're carrying, and just basic confidence with your carry gun. So I think they were saying I'm not gonna really trust the gun until I've shot 800 rounds, 200 rounds of carry ammo. Well, that's a lot of money. You're popping a buck a round of your carry ammo. So I'd hardly shot any of my carry ammo because it was so expensive. So I've got maybe the 800 FMJ, but the hollow points are, you know, much more expensive, twice as expensive at least. So anyway, I'm curious what your opinion on that is, and semi-related, is there any change in thinking with winter carry ammo? Speaking as someone from up north. Anyway, love the show. Thanks for all the info, and looking forward to hearing your response on the radio. Take care.
Hi, Steve. Thanks for calling in. I don't think he's called in before. Let me take the first question about carry ammo. And people that say, you know, you need to run 800 to 1,000 rounds through your gun to make sure that it's reliable. And also, I guess, some guy used to call it a 1,000-round trigger job, I think. Oh, yeah, that was me. I've been a big proponent of the 1,000-round trigger job. I think every gun you have, you should set a goal to give it a 1,000-round trigger job. I've done a whole podcast on that, and I've mentioned it before. Run 1,000 rounds through your gun. All you got to do is come to a couple classes. Come to a couple two-day classes or several one-day classes. Shoot some IDPA matches. You start doing that, and I'll bet you in a year's time, or even less, maybe in 6 to 9 months' time, you'll give your gun a 1,000-round trigger job. You need the training anyway. You need to go to competition to hone those good gun handling skills. Hey, for those of you coming to my Suarez International Close Range Gunfighting 2, CRG 2 class, which is more than half full, hey, I'm going to have them shoot 600 to 700 rounds in that class. So, you know, I mean, they're going to be over halfway to their 1,000-round trigger job if they haven't given it already. So, Steve, I'm a big believer in that. As far as carry ammo, well, yeah, I know it's a dollar a round, and that is a lot of money. I understand. You know, it used to the conventional wisdom that you had to run 250 trouble-free rounds through your gun, 250 trouble-free rounds with your favorite carry ammo. Well, these days it's hard to get carry ammo. It's expensive. Ammo prices are not going down. And yeah, it can be $1, $1.25, $1.50. I've seen it as high as $2 a round. You know, I would say 100 rounds is a good measure. 100 rounds of carry ammunition. Now, if you buy it at $1 or $1.25 a round, that's $100 or $125. I got to ask everybody listening to this show a very important question. How much is your life worth? I keep talking about that. How much is your life worth? As I mentioned, you know, previously, don't cheap out. Now, Steve, I'm not saying you're cheaping out. I don't want you to take it as that being directly towards you, and I'm not trying to say that that's who you are or the kind of person you are, but I know a lot of people that way. Yes, it's expensive. Is your life worth the couple hundred dollars of carry ammo? That's all I'm asking. You know, do it slowly. You know, do it slowly. Buy one box, shoot it, buy another box. Wait a little while till your budget allows it, buy another box, shoot it, buy another box. Do it one box at a time. But here's the problem. It's hard to find the same carry ammo all the time. This is one reason why I like Striker-fired polymer guns, because most of them out there feed pretty much anything. And they feed it reliably. Now, I've had people on this show before that said, well, all you got to do is run two magazines through it successfully. And the reason why you only have to run two magazines of carry ammo through it is because you're probably not going to fire more than two magazines in a gunfight. I understand that logic. But, you know, this is a law of averages game. The law of averages. If you have a gun that can fire multiple thousands of rounds without any malfunctions, and you have another gun that malfunctions once or twice every couple hundred rounds, what's the law of averages? What's the percentage there? What's the likelihood of you having a malfunction when you're trying to defend your life? I'd say the gun that will run 2,000 rounds flawlessly is far less likely to jam and have a malfunction than the other gun that, you know, fail to fed or fail to eject two or three times out of every 100 to 200 rounds. I'm just saying that you have to look at the percentages. You have to look at the overall percentage. But Steve's question is about carry ammo. Yeah, I do think you have to do a reliability test. I think you got to spend the money. Now, I would rather see people spend the money on ammunition than buying another gun. So many people like to go out and accumulate guns, 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 and that's great. Nothing wrong with buying guns, but how about if you take the gun that you're going to carry? And how about if you save your money and get a good training class with FMJ ammo, break that gun in, break you, the shooter, in, and then save some more money and go out and buy 100 rounds or 125 rounds of good carry ammo and fire that through your gun and see if you have success. And if you do, then I say you can call that gun good for carry. And then go buy another gun and do it all over again. This is a pretty strong commitment we make, folks, when we carry a gun. And I'll close this episode with this point. This is going to be the last point that I'm going to make before I get into the conclusion. This is a lifestyle. This is a serious commitment. And if you're going to carry a gun, do it right. And bet your life on that gun, and know that you can bet your life on that gun. If you have doubts about whether you can bet your life on that gun, you need to do two things. You need to either get rid of that gun and get one you feel more comfortable with, or you need to train, practice, buy ammo, and shoot, until you get confident with that gun. And so, thank you again, Steve, for that voicemail. Let me just remind you, Beyond Concealed Carry up in Seattle with Glenn Tate. I had him on recently. We talked about that. That class is officially half full. My CRG, my Close Range Gunfighting 2 level class that I'm teaching in San Antonio for Suarez International, that class is half full. Beyond Concealed Carry Enhanced with Ben, myself, and John Hathaway up in Arkansas. That baby has a lot of registrations. I'm not going to call it half full, but we're getting close. We're getting a lot of people signing up for that. Hey, Dallas and South Oklahoma folks, we're coming up to the Dallas-Fort Worth area March 8th. March 8th, we're doing Pistol Fighting Dynamics. That's different than Beyond Concealed Carry, folks. So if you haven't taken PFD, Pistol Fighting Dynamics, from Ben and myself, get signed up for that one. And San Antonio area listeners or South Texas listeners, we're doing another night fighting course February 8th. That's coming real soon. February 8th. Night fighting, low light, using your pistol in the dark, in low light. It's a whole different ball game. You can find sign-up links for all these classes at handgunworld.com. We just put up a couple new videos on the Shooters Club. Great giveaway coming up. I'm giving away a gun, and I'm giving away 250 rounds of ammunition, giving away a range bag, giving away tickets to the classes that Ben and I put on. All you have to do is be a member of the Shooters Club, and you can watch great videos that are produced by Ben Branham and myself with some good defensive handgun techniques. You can find all this stuff over at handgunworld.com. I do not have a bunch of commercials on this show, so this is the way that you can support my show. Thanks, folks, for tuning in to another episode of your weekly Handgun World podcast. I'm Bob Main. I carry a gun because I can't carry a cop. The loudest sound a shooter hears is a bang when he's expecting a click, or a click when he's expecting a bang. Shoot straight, shoot straight. Shoot straight and shoot safe. Messed that one up, didn't I? Talk to you next week. Goodbye.